disabled people. For us, it's not just about 2%, but we understand clearly that it's minimum 2%. And we also are very much serious about this one, because one other objective of the National Water Act is the redressing of the imbalances of the past. Now, what we did for this financial year is that in the performance agreement of our CEO, part of it is the appointment of the disabled community. And the agreement is that this is going to be cascaded to other managers and downwards in the entire institution, such that we believe that come next financial year, when we come to report on our annual report, the complexion must have changed completely. The second one is the appointment of the youth. On this one, I think we have an exhibit amongst ourselves here. I would request Madam Lihle to say that, and I would like to break that. She is very young. Yes. She is the second in charge in the institution, the executive corporate and finance. And it's not just about her youth, it's also about her qualification in the position, because she is a qualified chartered accountant, one of the very skills. She's a woman and she is young. I thought you are going to applaud her for that one. The other one is in our audit committee. We have also appointed a very young black woman again, who is fresh from school. She also holds an LLD, and the plan of the institution is that she will understudy the board secretary, who is very much knowledgeable on water issues and also on governance. So that is part of our succession plan. This young woman, I think, she's 22 years old. So maybe because the board secretary will be going on pension in about 2 years, we are hoping that it might be possible to appoint this young lady to be our board secretary. And also, we are planning to also fund young students who are keen on learning whatever is water resource related as far as the youth is concerned. So I think the other one which I wanted to talk on is the key relationship on the parliamentary portfolio. Chairperson, I think you are on point on this one, and we really appreciate it, because to be honest, we have realized that you really take us seriously, and we just do not know how you can wrap this to the not like we do not enjoy the relationship with the province, but then the understanding that you are having is very much different of that of the province. We just need a strategy. If you are able to help us on this one, we can really appreciate it a lot. But we do understand very well that you are our main key stakeholder that you take to heart, and we shall make it a point that whatever we do, we provide it to your office, because we do understand that you are always on our back. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, sir. I think I'll continue from where our chairperson did. The first one, I think the question from the chairperson himself, the alien species eradication. In our area, sir, we are not doing it specifically. We have a body called Water, Working for Water. They are in charge of eradicating alien species in our water management area. And they are doing quite a good job. So we have not interfered with that. We can only help them with the demarcation and then spotting the areas. On wastewater treatment works and pollution, which many of the honorable members talked about, the overloading and the aged infrastructure causes the problem for us. That's where you see rocks and then sometimes semi-treated sewage going into the rivers. Some 40 pumps all process itself inside, capacity problem, which we try to help with, and financial resources also cited as problems by the municipalities. The outcome of the notices, where members are saying we have achieved some successes. Yes, as I indicated, you can see that some of the pumps that were not working are now working. That's why I showed some pictures for honorable members to see. The main problem is sometimes this problem itself, you think that everything is fixed. But then it keeps recurring, and that's why we keep on following up with notices, compliance notices and others. Where we don't get joy, we follow it up to the police, criminal charges we lay. As I indicated, we have three last year. So we have some joy, but sometimes not everything becomes permanent when it is corrected. It comes back and we keep following. On the issue of flow and the dam capacity, yeah, we know this year the rainfall is not good. We are going to have a problem with our water if it continues like this. But what we have put in place is we have a river operation system here. In the crocodile, we have the crocop, which Brian actively does with the stakeholders. So we decide with the farmers, irrigation boards, they're also sitting on it. If the dam level is at this point, this much will be released from the Quena Dam. Now it went up to about 4.5. We brought it back to 3.5 kumex, so that we don't drain the whole of the dam before we get rainfall. So the restriction, we have already asked some municipalities to restrict some water uptake, and then the farmers will also be restricted. Sometimes they will even restrict themselves because of we are not going to take everything when it comes to the season. This is what we take. That's what's in place we're doing for to ensure that we have water for all the people. Acid mine drainage, yes, in the upper Komati it was a problem. Then we came up with an AMG strategy. We have a committee established for that one. And then in the upper committee now, we are involving all the other catchments. People from the various catchments are going sitting on the committee so that whatever we do in the upper committee can also be replicated in the other catchments. I think that's it. Yeah, sure. I think that those are the questions I got for. Oh, salinity problem. And eutrophication. We have the integrated water quality management framework, and there was one special study, master study, on salinity. And this has been, the model on salinity has been workshopped with all the stakeholders. This was held by the Rhodes University, and so we're trying to use that model to ensure that we reduce the salinity. When it comes to eutrophication, we are doing the national eutrophication monitoring for the department, and we're doing it on the dam, even on the Kenna Dam as well. And so far, our results indicate that eutrophication is not a very big issue in those dams that we are monitoring. And in our rivers, we're doing the nutrient monitoring as well, the nitrate and then the phosphate that can lead to eutrophication. Where there is a problem, we react to. But so far, I think we are able to contain them. They are okay. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Any additions from Nkomat? No. Brede?
Good afternoon, Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, I would like to say, I would like to acknowledge the full board, and I want to say I'm very sorry that we were not here on time, seeing that we were booked for 2 o'clock this afternoon. But I'm glad to be here. Chairperson, I would like to just emphasize on one thing before I give back to the CEO. And that is, the VDG just said previously that the CMAs are doing very well. And I fully agree to him, especially from seeing it from our side. And I just want to give this back to you, that what we got from the people on ground level. So being a CMA that is people-centered, we are receiving feedbacks that say it is great improvement to have an office staffed with people that understand the local water resources and problems associated with water management. It is for the same reason that we are having another office in Georgia. I think the CEO also already mentioned that to you this morning. But I would be irresponsible if I do not share the wishes of many South Africans who believe in the government's policy of creating CMAs and local water management institutions. Whether there is a form of water user association or any similar water management institution, it's a thing that you feel from ground level, Chairperson, that the people are very satisfied to have an office close to them that they can go to and give their problems and share their problems in the water management area. I would like now to give it back to my to the CEO. I first want to say that the person sitting left of me is Mr. Yanni Verstappen. He's the Senior Manager for Water Resource Management at the VGC and CMA. And then I'll give back to the CEO, our committed and hard-working CEO, Pakamani Buthelezi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Perhaps before I respond to some of the questions, is to acknowledge the remarks made by the Chairperson, but also to acknowledge the remarks made by Mr. Singh in relation to the importance of this committee, because it's part and parcel of our key decision makers as we move forward. Having said that, coming from the CMA, there is an old African proverb. It's mainly coming from Western Ghana by Asante people, that says a bird that sits too long in a tree, it invites a storm. From that perspective, we firmly believe that it is important and appropriate to allow the CMAs to continue, as the Chair has made, but more importantly, to continue engaging with everybody insofar as the water issues are concerned. Now, coming back to the questions, there was a question on disability, of which is 2%. When you look at our, to reach that target as a minimum, we can go beyond. But if you translate our employment profile, out of 29, we've got 1% who's disabled. And if you translate that into a percentage, it's a very misleading. It gives you a 3.4%. But the most important part is, as an entity, we try out by all possible means to employ across the spectrum. We currently have a human resource strategy in place that ensures that everyone is equally able and ready to do the job he's employed. But also out of that human resource strategy, it says, once you have reached the 50th target, you shall create the employment equity. But in terms of our employment profile, we are fairly representative. Even when you look at the numbers, out of 29, 18 are females. Already, it tells a story. Not just females, but females who can do the job. I think that is very, very important to mention. There was also some comments around the issues of delegations to the same age. We think the department took a very, very good decision by delegating these functions to the CMA, because now it's going to be clear to all the water users who is the responsible authority when it comes to those functions. Based on the nature of this delegation, the CMA, acting on behalf of the department, makes those decisions. But it doesn't mean that the department, or what call it, the department simply ignores its role. It continues to provide the regulations. It continues to provide standards. It continues to provide an overall strategic picture of what needs to happen on the ground. I think in our interpretation of the survey is an acknowledgement by the department to say, you are my institution. Make my work easy on the ground. You are our fingertips point on the ground, continue to improve the service. Hence, we think these delegations must continue as they are to better improve the services on the ground. There was also a point regarding our targets insofar as water use management is concerned. Perhaps I must say, before our targets were numbers, then we sat with our current department, water and sanitation, to say we need to change the focus. One of changing the focus, where it comes to demand issues, where it is driven by a client, don't use a number. Let us use the percentage. I think from now onwards, the targets will be slightly different, because most of these targets, where it is demand driven, it is a challenge to put a number. But what if you don't reach the number? It gives an impression that you are not doing your job. But because you are failing to acknowledge that this is beyond your control, it is demand-driven. Hence, we are now using percentages. However, I must also respond to a question on water use applications. Some of these applications were handed over to us as the backlog from the department. We did our best to fast-track them. But most importantly, these applications are also dependent on an applicant himself or herself. If there is incomplete information, you can't make a decision. You keep on doing through and through. Hence, we are now saying if the applications have been received to us with all the complete information, it should be easy to make a decision. I think there was also a question on page 18. It was mainly on the formulation of those targets. I think the answer, again, it's now based on the demand-driven. If the demand exceeds your numbers, then it becomes as if your targets were low. But now, since we have changed the targets to a percentage, it will begin to give a different story. Finally, there was a question that was not asked, but I'm going to respond to it. The value of water. The value of water to us as a CMA, it is as important as the oxygen itself. Because you cannot always put a running on water. But you can always know that without water you can't survive. Hence, we as a CMA, we think this is an important platform where you can showcase of our work. On that note, thank you very much, Chairperson.
I like the question that was not asked. Over an assumption. The next one should be water research.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to
share the responses with the CFO of the Water Research Commission. And thanks very much for the questions and the comments. We've said it before, and we should say it again, that this forum is an incredibly important part around building the strategy for water research in the country. And we're greatly appreciative of that. I'll go through the different questions quite quickly. On the issue around disability and youth, the WRC in its staff establishment currently sits at 1.6% with regards to disability. And there are strategies in place around making that number moved closer to the target, and that includes a partnership with Disability South Africa around this. And with regards to the youth, we don't have many youth employed in the institution itself, but we have very large youth programs. And these range from some of the programs I presented on the slides to career fairs, to the National Water Youth Summit, as well as the Green Indaba, and putting out aids to organize for other institutions to be able to engage youth much more meaningfully in the water space, including a very popular publication called Water at Work, which is a list of career options and pathways for young people to get into the water business as a whole. But in addition to that, we participate in the internship programs that are available around us, including the NRF intern program, as well as Technogirl, which is run nowadays out of the presidency. And parallel with all of this, we have an empowerment fund as part of our research funding to develop young researchers in the institution. With regards to the question about the heat wave and the issue around the drought cycle, a great deal is being done in this domain. I think we're fairly certain now, globally, that we are at the beginning of an El Nino cycle. So the heat waves may well be a temporary occurrence, but it's more likely that it's going to be part of what the cycle is going to be for the next 5 to 7 years. And so a good deal of work is currently being done, including some short-term work to produce policy and ministerial briefs on this matter to advise decision-making, including a very big chunk of work around a green water strategy. This is to move to non-irrigated agriculture options, and it's complicated because it's not just about the water management and the water technologies here. We're also talking about modifying the plants substantially so that they're able to withstand a whole new strategy around how to get water. on the issues of the question about visiting WRC projects, we'd like to repeat our invitation to this committee. So we've been asking to accommodate you in a 2-day workshop at least for, well, this will be the third invitation. We would really love to do that. And we can organize it very carefully with you so that we can have a variety of exposures. And this is not only to orient the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee members on this matter, but to also use your own ambassadorship to bring many more partners in those communities into the water research domain. We would actually really value that opportunity and we'd like to do so. And related to that was the question around advising the department around the medium to long-term futures. And we currently have a series of very useful studies in this domain. The ones that have been going on for quite a while are the climate change scenarios, and we have water climate change scenarios that are actively being used in the climate response strategy currently in government. But we're also conducting water foresight, and together with the Institute for Security Studies, using a risk-based tool to do water forecasting over the next 30 years. And we think this is going to give us very, very concrete information around which to mold our decision-making for the water strategy in South Africa, and it will have an influence to either NWRS3, or it might be called the National Water Resources and Services Strategy, whatever it is called, but the next version of that will strongly be influenced. On
On the question on the non-renewable water, non-revenue water rather, and the WRC's role, well, the WRC was in fact the custodian of that study, and it is a world first. It is the most comprehensive study of its kind done anywhere in the world. And the study itself has triggered a massive policy response around it, including giving a lot of impetus to the war on leaks that the president has launched. But in addition to that, there is a plethora of work around suitable response systems. There are technological responses, there are social innovation responses, there are governance and institutional responses, and all of these are making their way to the decision makers, both in the public sector as well as some of the private sector folk that we work with instruments such as water footprinting and the national surveys that we do per industry sector on water use in various sectors. Robert Basson, on the issue of hydropower, I'll give you some of the direct numbers associated with this, but we must take into account that we're currently not working at economies of scale. But if one uses the Bloom Water facility, for example, the turbine itself cost $1 million, and it was largely imported components that had to be assembled because we don't have local assembly yet. And the total cost of putting it all together and the inline connections, etc., was $3.5 million in total. And the projected payback from the saving in the electricity bill is currently between 4 and 7 years. Now, working with what's happening now at a much larger scale in the city of Joburg and soon to follow Ekurhuleni and in the larger Rand water system, we are going to be getting to the economies of scale. So these numbers are going to get a lot better. And here we're talking about the conduit hydro on top of the reservoirs. When you talk about the inline turbines in the large pipelines, then the energy yield is much, 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 much higher. So there's a very positive future associated with that. the question related to an ongoing discussion with yourself, Chair, around constructing these smart human capital development pipelines. There are three things that are happening in that domain that we've taken directly out of the conversations we've had both with the committee and with you personally around this. One is that we're now very actively doing tracer studies of the people that have gone through our system and where they are. The initial indicator is that most of the people are actually ending up in the academic environment and they forming part of the future research base in the system. But we haven't stopped there because we've taken to heart what you've been telling us for quite a while. We've now constructed a relationship, and the minister has been a very important glue in this, between ourselves, the two learning academies, with the department and with Rand Water, as well as the EW CETA. And there's some interest in the Italian government around partnering in this. So we want to construct among these institutions the right kind of pipeline that goes all the way from post-school, but trade training, all the way to graduate development, and in our domain to postgraduate development, and then the appropriate placements associated with that right along the chain. And we should have a model up and running by around this time next year, at least at an experimental level with some pilots, and it looks very promising indeed. The bigger questions associated with the compulsory in-service in the public sector is something that we should have a much deeper discussion about, and it's something that the portfolio committee itself could become one of the very important drivers to make this stick. The last question that I want to pick up on before handing over to the CFO on the expenditure matter of emphasis issues is the issue around research duplication and coordination. Currently, there isn't too much unproductive duplication in the way we currently coordinate our work among the institutions in the public domain. This is the other research councils and the universities. But the way we're going to organize that into a much more rigorous framework is in the context of the research development and innovation roadmap. This is the exercise that we've been doing, partnering with the Department of Science and Technology and the Department of Water and Sanitation. And we built into that process the mechanisms around this coordination. And it has a variety of objectives. The one objective is to avoid duplication, because we can't waste the limited resources we have. But the second one is to organize a programmatic approach so that we have value add from the different players inside the system. And everyone can do this without losing out on their primary performance indicators. And we think this could work very well. And we're looking in two domains around this. One is the notion of research centers of excellence. But the other one, which is even more interesting, are the centers of competence. And the centers of competence idea is to have knowledge partners, like the public research institutions and universities, together with private sector partners, where you can start shortening the value chain between producing the knowledge and getting that quickly out into the places that it can be used. So, Chair, all of these are currently at work, and we would be delighted to keep you updated on the developments in these areas. And with your permission, the CFO will talk about the expenditure matter.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to be very frank with you. At the outset, I think what has happened with the WRC over the years, it's obviously grown in terms of research, development, and so on. The core business has certainly grown in terms of its impact. What has happened, though, is we haven't matched that growth with the support structures required, specifically around the finance. And so when the CEO asked me mid-March to come and work with him on this, that was my first observation. So what we had to do was basically inform me that there was an audit qualification, which we needed to resolve. It required a hell of a lot of effort from many, many people. And we had to go back a number of years to fix things. What it demonstrated very clearly was that, obviously, I guess, given the size of the organization and it's growing and so on, we few things fell off the path, and we needed to do these reconciliations. I must say, though, with the support of the board and the CEO, we've been able to employ additional staff, bring in additional expertise to deal with some of the complex accounting matters that needed to be dealt with. For example, we have a number of partners, we have foreign transactions that we also have to deal with. Whilst it is a small organization in terms of rand and cents, there are a number of accounting complexities that need to be dealt with. I think it's fair to say that we've got the skills to do that now. With regard to the procurement, which is also an area that we've neglected, I think, over the years, and the results are there, and we admit that we've got the irregular expenditure, and I think just with respect to that irregular expenditure that has been reported, we've also we've looked at whether value was derived from the expenditure, and indeed, there was an investigation that was done post the audit, which was headed by our audit committee chair and an independent party who gathered all the facts and so on, and it was concluded that indeed, whilst it was irregular in terms of the expenditure was irregular in terms of not following the processes in all instances, value was derived, there was no fraudulent activity, there's nothing fraudulent about it. And it was largely because of a lack of expertise. What we've done to rectify that is to basically, in fact, I must say there was no procurement SEM expertise to talk of. It was inadequate to my mind. In a sense that it's procurement ACM, it's an area of expertise. There's a lot of rules to follow. There's a lot of processes. So whilst you may have one tender or two tenders, the volumes may not be high, you still have to follow the rules. So I think that's what we need to rectify. So what we have done is we have employed now a full-time basis an SCM manager supported by SCM supply chain management officers. We have also we've done a number of educational and knowledge sharing exercises in the form of work sessions that we've held with the operational staff, with the research staff, to inform them of the processes, share with them what's required. We've also implemented a number of committees to oversee the process, those being a specification committee to make sure that before we go out on tender, it's properly specified what our requirements are, all interested parties' inputs are considered, and it's done in a structured fashion. Secondly, when we have the actual tenders or quotations that come out or submitted, we have a proper evaluation process as well as an adjudication process. So oversight to make sure that the procedures have been, process have been followed, so that's been implemented now. I think that's about it. There's still work to be done. Nothing happens overnight. But I think with the support of the CEO and the board, we've made some progress, and some good progress, I think, at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. We'll answer the questions, and I'll also ask colleagues to just help me very quickly. Chair, there was a question around the reflections on fruitless, and there was a question around the disabled and young people. Let me just start with those. I think in the report, Chair, we have tried to reflect on fruitless. I think Member Mguni has also picked up the roaming cost that we dealt with for the COO, which in terms of PFMA, the allowance that we normally provide for executive would have been about 1.5. I think it went up, and we needed to reflect each and every cost, and we did that. But there's quite a bit in the report that covers those issues. On the disabled, Chair, I must say that we have actually achieved the target now in terms of our next statistics coming through to the committee. You'll see that we've done that. But going forward, because we do accept, Chairperson, that it's very difficult when we lose colleagues that are falling within the category to recruit from that level, it becomes difficult. We have established a strategic partnership with Disabled South Africa. But we also accept that members who sometimes meet the kind of expectations that we have may not be available at that point in time, and we're hoping that we'll use that approach to constantly achieve the 2% target, and we're working very hard on that. On the youth, in terms of our program, we're targeting at three levels. One, in terms of broadly of our infrastructure projects. The projects always target the youth within the vicinity of the footprint of the project and train and skill young people. But at TCTA, we have our own internship program and bursary program. I must say, Chairperson, that we have employed young people who come from those two support programs into the organization. Some will train and then move and join other institutions. But the nice part of it, Chairperson, is that it's within the construction sector in the country. And we're hoping that we can keep as many of them as possible within TCTA if we can. But, Chairperson, I think we will have a further focus program on young people so that we can increase the numbers. There was a problem that was raised around how do we deal with issues of land acquisition. It's not easy, Chairperson. We follow the laws of the country. And we would also be looking at the value of the property that we're trying to acquire as much as possible. But we also do discourage issues of overpricing, because as soon as property owners know that the project will be sitting on a particular footprint, we do see those prices start to skyrocket. We do discourage them because we do our own evaluations, so that by the time we sit around the table, the debate is based on market value and not just emotional discussions. We do that very well. Chairperson, we do also consider the last resort in terms of the instrumentation of government, which is expropriation. But we use it as a last resort when it's difficult, because the project take priority in terms of water security in the country. But in most cases, I think we've met very good landowners that are willing to have a noble discussion around the acquisition for servitude and so on. Can I just, the last one, Chairperson, I think there was a question around the WOP. We just wanted to clarify that as TCTA, we did not build the WOP. It was built by the department. However, the minister has given us a task to implement all the phases of the Olifants project. At this point in time, we focused on 2C of that project, which was a pipeline. The next one where we're discussing with the miners is on the 2B, which is affecting miners in large numbers, and I think that conversation is proceeding very well. We're hoping to reach very good conclusions in terms of financing that 2B. The total project is quite big. I think we're talking about 16 billion rand to implement all of the phases. But the 2B, which will affect some miners at this point in time, I think will be about 7 billion rand. And we need to raise the money from the market to be able to deliver on that project. Johan, do you want to just add on this?
Thank you, C. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I think the problem on Olifants maybe was that initially TCTA was only mandated to look at 2C. And we only received a directive in February this year to also look at the balance of the bulk distribution works. But the engagements that we had with the mines are very encouraging, and there may be lesser or fewer mines that are prepared to sign offtake agreements, but there are still strong interest from the mining community to participate in that project. We hope to, by the end of this year, have the offtake agreements agreed that we will then present to the individual mines, which will allow us then in the course of next year to start raising funding for the implementation of the project.
Thank you, Chairperson. The other questions, I think they, first of all, let's apologize to Member Basson. I think there was also Member Maluleke on our presentation on that table, because it might be creating confusion. I think our hope, Chair, was that we wanted to show you what we were projecting to deliver on and what the actual would have been. So if it has created confusion, our apologies. We hope to be able to represent far better in the future in terms of those costs, because all of them are long-term costs and the shifts we wanted to show them. Just to Member Basson on MACWAP, if at all in our articulation we sounded as if we were reflecting to the phase two, our apologies. What we wanted to say was that the phase one has been done. It's a 43-kilometer pipeline that we have done, and that's the one that is contributing to the Medupi program. The phase two is the one that is currently being debated in terms of the size of the pipe and the volume that it must be out down the line. And members might have been aware, Chairperson, that there was a strategic debate whether it's going to be 100 mil or it's going to be a 75 mil in diameter. And that debate, I think, is going to be narrowed based on the fact that what is the volume that is required in that part of the mining belt, inclusive of potential the coal fall, which may be coming into the future. So the debates are narrowing quite nicely towards the end. The project is extremely attractive for funding because of the cash flows that are quite robust, and we believe that it should be able to be funded. We probably just need to reach the agreement on the potential movement between the 75 mils to the 100, so that by that time we can justify where the difference of 25 will be going to into the future, Chairperson. So those are the two phases of Mukolo Crocodile project. There was a question by Ubabu Mngoni on the how we. Oh, sorry. There was a question on royalties to Lesotho. I'll get the CFO to give the details. We do pay royalties to Basotho because of the water consumption that we get from Lesotho. I think the total value of volume that we consume per year is close to 900 million cubes per year, which is what South Africa is consuming. We do have an obligation to pay Basotho every month in terms of the royalties that we owe, and I must say that we've never defaulted on those payments. We pay on time and do strategic reconciliation where they are overshoot there and there. CFO, do you want to talk about the differential in percentage?
Thanks, Chairperson. In terms of the 14% versus the 16% between the 2 years, it's lower in 2015 because there was an audit done on the LHDA side and they picked up that they had actually, TCT had actually overpaid over the past number of years. And that amounted to about 88 million rand. So there was a practice of recouping that money, and at least 50% of that was recouped in the 2015 financial year. So that brought down the royalties number reflected in 2015. And then the second aspect relates to a slight decline in the volumes that were actually delivered into South Africa, because a portion of the royalties that paid is there's a fixed portion and a variable portion, and the variable portion is volume dependent. So that also resulted in a slight decline in the royalties number.
Thank you, Chair. We must indicate that also in terms of managing the fiscal flows in terms of South Africa's obligation to that project, our eyes are very much focused and we're glued to the movement of those cash flows because they are so important in building the credibility for the next phases. So our reconciliation with Basotho is always spot on. Where we've missed the mark, we do our own audit and recon. So all the fiscal flows, we believe that they are accounted for. Chairperson, there was a question that was raised around potential loss because of fraud. That individual has been reported to SAPS and the matter is being dealt with. Within the organization, it was released out of our own organization because of that. So the matter is being dealt with, and we also believe that we have implemented everything according to the PFMA requirements on that matter. The question around the housing, how do we build the houses and manage the quality of them? Chairperson, because we believe that when we deliver the houses to communities that would have moved from the footprint of the project, government cannot deliver back to those communities substandard because we believe that those communities have gone into a very honest partnership with us. So we do take serious due care of those projects, of those houses. I mean, members probably have seen some of those houses that we have given to communities around. Here in Cape Town, we have a big, lovely village called... what is the village? Lamont Housing, which is just at the foot of the mountain next to the dam, the Back River Project. The quality is quite high quality, Chair, because we also make sure that our own contractors do make sure that the project is of high quality. Currently in Moyo Mngeni area where we're building the dam in KZN, the quality of those houses is also spot on. I think when the minister invites the committee when she's launching those 41 houses, yourself, Chair, you'll see that the quality is very good because we cannot risk the houses falling because that will reflect on our part in terms of that partnership with communities that we don't want it to falter as we go forward and interact with other communities going forward. You'll also see, Chair, that in Lesotho, those villages were also built for housing. and those houses even today are standing and qualitatively so. We do take extreme care, Chair, because we invest a lot of money, sometimes up to a value of about 30 million for communities. Chair, you have raised the issue directly with us on the short to long term on AMD. I'll also ask Johan to give detail, but safe to say, Chairperson, that the project itself is being implemented very well. We have learned quite a lot ourselves because the AMD treatment plants are novelty. I think the biggest challenge going forward will be the technology that will be applicable and the strategic use of those of that water, which the minister is applying her mind carefully around it. But we must also say that because it's water, I think it's of value to this country to augment the whole Vaal River system, which at this point probably needs another 400 million cubes, just to be able to surface from potential deficits that are coming down the line. But with the Lesotho 2 coming upstream, we should be in a position as Gauteng to have good volumes to sustain the shortage of supply. And I think the minister is leading very well in that regard, Chair. Johan?
Thank you, C. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think maybe just to say that as the committee is most probably aware that CCDA's mandate currently is limited to what we now refer to as the first phase, which is the short-term interventions. Our progress to date on that is very good. We hope to be fully completed also with the Eastern Basin, that's the last one under construction at this point in time, around February to April next year, when the trial period, the trial operation period will start. As far as the long term is concerned, it's very critical that the long term solution gets implemented as soon as possible. Mainly the reason for that is because the short term solution releases high salinity water into the river system, which then requires dilution releases from fresh water resources. So it is very critical that the long term solution proceeds. And the Department of Water and Sanitation has completed the feasibility study on that, considering the options on how to desalinate the water. And the process is currently with the minister, and we are hoping that a pronouncement will be made by the minister shortly, and in particular on the way forward on how to implement, who to implement, and how to fund the long-term solution. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We probably just want to reflect on the skills levels. It is true, I think members might have picked up that our numbers are sort of showing some type of interesting differences between previous year and the year coming. It just reflects, Chairperson, the finalization of projects where you're beginning to scale down. Also on human being participation, but most of our projects do at most extent utilize local labor and skilled local people. So the statistics that you're seeing, Chairperson, are basically reflective of the projects that are now being wound down at the point of implementation, where you probably may not be exacting much more of human labor going forward. Chair, we hope that we might have exhausted most of the questions. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair.
Thanks. I can see their hands for follow-up questions. On my side, I didn't hear TCTA addressing the issue of how are you going to address the issue of on the finances, where you give tenders without a quotation as required by the PFMA. Can I give members to for a follow-up? Honorable Nguni, Basson, and Honorable Baker.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. That was the first one to TCA on the issue of these tenders. And also, you remember that when you don't follow your own policy when you are bidding, I think that was the second one. The third one is the issue of the cost of the litigation. How many litigations that you have against you and the cost, the financial implication. And to breed a horse, you spoke about incomplete forms, which made you not to meet the target. I requested you to clarify whether you have any dedicated staff to deal with those incomplete forms. And the last one was Nkomati. The numbers of the rivers polluted, and if possible, their names.
Chairperson, I would like to go back to the Crocodile Mokolo project, the second phase. Eskom, before they installed the, or before they going to install, because I believe they have not installed that yet, the desulfuration mechanisms, they indicated that they would use 15.4 million cubic meters of water per year, which they get 10.9 cubic meters from the Mokolo Dam. Now, I don't know whether your department have got the new allocation that they would need after the desulfuration mechanism, flue gas desulfuration mechanism being in place, how much water would be needed, which is a concern, and it was raised that the minister indicated that project would cost 13 billion rand, the pipeline. My question is how do you determine the price of the pipeline if you still don't know what size of pipe you're going to use? That could mean that even more pipe, the bigger the pipe, the more pump stations upstream on the pipeline you would have. And do you have at the moment any indication what the new cost of that pipeline would be? And it still seems that you are uncertain. I know you're busy with the EIA on the matter, and there's still servitudes that you need to get servitudes over land. When will this project then start, if this is not finalized yet? Because when Medupi gets online, the pipeline, it seems, is not going to be built yet. Are we talking about 2019 before Medupi will get enough water for desulfuration? And I understand it's not your problem, because you're still waiting for the calculation from them how much water they're going to need. Because out of the Mokolo Dam, the allocation, they can't get more. The balance of that water goes to the mines, to Exxaro. So the water must come from the Crocodile River, and we still don't know what the influence of that will be on the Hartbeespoort Dam. Because the indication is that the loss on the Hartbeespoort Dam is 54% of its water is being lost concerning heat and the canal system where they lose water. And secondly is that even if the dam is full, there's a lot of sludge in that dam. Doesn't mean that the capacity of the dam is full. So we can run into problems. And what about the towns downstream? Because, as you know, it feeds the Rooikopies Dam. It was built for irrigation. And from there, there is a canal running as well to the Falkop Dam to supply Falkop with water, so that Magalies can also get water for treatment that goes back to Rustenburg and to other areas, as well as goes to Tabazimbi. So the impact on the Crocodile, you know, it's something that it's uncertain for us, and we get a lot of questions about it. So if you've got more information, whether you can give it in writing, if you can't do it now, I would appreciate that.
Barbara, I think he's the only person left. I wanted more of an indication of the preparedness of the country. Maybe it's not something that you could answer. Perhaps it's something that I need to take to the department to deal with the El Nino phenomenon in the current situation that we are in. I mean, obviously you've done the research that it's informed the department, but how really are we to actually deal with it? We're already in the throes of it, so. But that may not be yours. But if you can just give us some comments, it would be great. CCC, I'm not sure if you answered, if this was addressed, but maybe I'm not reading it correctly. Under your project, the Central Basin Project, the targeted project for 31st March was award of tender to April 2014, 95% complete, annual spend $97 million. And in your actual progress, it says award of tender May 2014, that I understand fine, but it is 36% completed and annual spend $122 million. And I'm sure in the presentation earlier, I heard 100% complete. So I was a bit confused by that. Please can you clarify? And then also, if it is only 36% complete and the targeted budget was $97 million and now we're on $122 million, that shows an overspend of $25 million at this point. If you could just clarify that for me, please. Thank you.
Before the responses, I'll check if the chairperson is having a follow-up. And I'll give back the baton to him. Thank you.
I hope the question I had asked about the long-term solution shall have been taken care of. Sorry that I could quickly jump out. When we went to Germiston Basin, we were informed that at that time, we shall have been having 18 months, maximum 24 months, for you to be ready with a long-term solution. I would imagine by now we shall be 6 months down the line after having been there. And my understanding is that you have not even started doing anything in the direction of the actual construction of the plant itself. And we are also informed that for you to be ready with such a plant, you need to take anything in the region of about a year or so. And also mentioning what Nate about lack of funding for that project. Now with time and the risks associated with such, one begins to get worried as to whether are we indeed going to meet the target. Now that we shall have been expected by now to have cleared the area, to have started doing some construction work, let alone the budgetary issues associated with such. And also, lastly, related to the same question, whether you are investigating any possibilities of any private partnerships in this respect, especially given the fact that you do talk about your budget constraints, if you like.
Thank you, Chairperson. I recognize that the Chair is much more aware of his milestones because Chairperson seems to be quite specific on our model and how we'd have liked to see futuristically, Chair. It is true that if the Chairperson recall, we did put a full strategy and even made a proposal for long term, projected in terms of how we have seen the three basins being finalized as short-term, short to medium, and then begin to deal with the future projected value and the approach to long-term. The
proposal in terms of the strategy and ideas have been submitted to Minister. I think Minister is considering that, Jefferson. And our view is that we also need to run these plants that we have now and even test their full capacity in terms of implementation and delivery. I think the central basin, it is true that at this point in time, we're testing even the ports that we've created, those reservoirs, including the mechanisms that they have to deliver, which in actual fact, it begins to influence the finalization of the Jemison plant, Jefferson, so that we do not have major design issues when that project is done. I will give Johan a chance to give details in terms of the time lags. We believe that, Jefferson, when the minister pronounces, the funding should be coming through, especially with the mechanisms that were put in place in terms of how you involve private sector funding in financing the project. Because remember, the water that we're looking at is water that will augment the Vaal River system. It will also save this government a few billions of rands that would have been used to build a phase three in Lesotho, because the water is quite enough to be able either to be used for other purposes in the country. Johan, do you want to touch on the details?
Jefferson, I think the issue around the 18 months, maybe if I can talk to the time frame. If the minister declares or pronounces on who needs to implement the long-term solution, because I think when you step out, I try to explain that currently GCA's mandate is limited to the short-term solution. And as far as the progress on the short-term solution, I think we're doing very well. And the Eastern Basin will be completed by February next year when the trial operation will start. So if the minister pronounces on who must implement the long-term solution, and that decision is taken, let's say, in October, the first step would be then to do an EIA for the long-term solution. And the time frame for EIA has been indicated to be 18 months. Now, one can see how you can accelerate that process, but it's likely to at least take a year to do the EIA. In parallel to that time period, one can then start the procurement process to line up the contractors that will participate in the implementation of the long-term solution. But the construction period, we don't see that to be less than 2 years. So if you've got a one-year EIA process and you've got a two-year minimum construction period, then I think that would be a more realistic time frame for when the long-term solution will kick into play, which then means that for this minimum three-year period, we will continue to release high salinity water into the river system, and we will continue to need to release fresh water to dilute that in order to resolve the water quality problem lower down in the Vaal River. So that is unfortunately, I think, a fairly optimistic time frame. In terms of the funding, Jefferson, I think that's our least concern, because National Treasury has indicated support for the long-term solution. And given the fact that the Vaal River system users will greatly benefit from the desalination of that water, there's also a very strong case to be made why they should contribute to the cost of the long-term solution. But the whole rationale of the long-term solution should be to take that water and put it to beneficial use. Currently, we're releasing high salinity water into the river system, and there's no revenue stream attached to that. So once we desalinated that water, we can actually use it either for industrial or potable use, and then we can start generating an income stream from that.
The movement in the cost that you reflected, 97 to 122.
If I can just that table on our slides. This is just comparing the actual achievement against what we plan to achieve. and there has been a mistake on the central basin, which I think we've corrected. So the presentation that was shown on the projector is most probably different to the one that the honourable members may have. So in fact, just to clarify, on the central basin, we projected that the annual spend will be $97 million, which is largely to do with the operation of that plant. Given that the plant was already declared operational in December 2014. So the cost in terms of the $122 million, it is higher than the $97 million, and one of the reasons contributing to that would be the clarifiers, which is part of the process, had a mechanism that proved to be not up to standard for AMD sludge. The engineers used the normal, wastewater sludge as a test, because we didn't have the sludge at the time, and later on it proved that that mechanism needed to be strengthened. And we had to invest more money to make sure that we get the right clarifiers in place. But maybe just to point out, we haven't paid twice. So the under-designed clarifiers was at the cost of the contractor and the engineer, and what we now have to pay is the cost of the, you know, the higher capacity clarifiers. I think there's, on the eastern basin, there's estimated expenditure of $635 million, and we only spent $220 million. And the reason for that is when we were ready to award the contract for the eastern basin, the funding was not resolved. So we only received the go-ahead from the department 6 months later. So the expenditure is just lower because we started later with the project. Thanks, Chair.
I think there was also a clear from Chairperson, from Mr. Passon, in terms of sharing information on MACWAP 2. It is true that we are studying and having very useful exchange with National Treasury about the future of that project and the volumes, and potentially how we're going to pay for that debt. I must say that, yes, CDJ's initial projection was 100, because we're projecting also coal 4, and also we would have built in quite a number of other assumptions in terms of social impact, social requirement, including potential industrial growth in the area. I think the debate around whether the Department of Energy is foreseeing coal 4 is what is at the table at the moment. And we're hoping to resolve that very soon. In terms of making sure that communities do benefit downstream and so on, it is part of the articulation and the design. But we would like to probably share with you, if at all there's anything else that we can guide on, that we may have a blind spot on through you, Chair, Mr. Passon, so that at least all of us move from the same position in terms of the future use of that water and Limpopo to begin to build a very strong system for itself in terms of making sure that communities also benefit from this project. President, there was a question around the litigation costs. I'll ask the CFO just to touch on it. In most cases, we do build the value, especially where we have potentially bought land or in the process of acquiring land, inclusive of going beyond the market approach and expropriation. And we do accept that down the line, some farmers may come back and take us to court. So negotiations don't stop at a point where we differ. We constantly try and find ways. The court becomes the last resort. So in terms of putting some kind of strategic contingencies for litigations, we do that because at a point where you try to resolve the matter out of court, there may be some kind of benefit from both parties to be able to make the project a winner rather than the cost going to a court case. Therefore, do you want to touch on that?
Thanks. Chair, just to emphasize that what we've reflected in our annual report relates to what we see as potential litigation costs, because all of the matters, especially the two expropriation cases, are under discussion, debate, arbitration. So we will only know the costs of those once the outcome has been given in favor of TCTA or in favor of the claimant. But at this point in time, what we've reflected is the potential of between 18 to 20 million rand should all of those materialize. Thanks. Chair, I'll also address the question on the three quotes. Just to emphasize that the findings on the three quotes relate to items under 200,000 rand each, because all items being procured over the value of 200,000 rand go through an open tender process. Now, what happened in these instances was we had a conflict between our supply chain policy and our delegation of authority. Our policy stated that you needed to request three quotes, whereas our delegation of authority said you must obtain three quotes. So what was actually being implemented was the request three quotes. So you'd request for the three quotes, and if two or one came in, and if it was a valid and reasonable and met the specification, that was accepted, because for all practical intents and purposes, to go back and ask for a re-quote on something under 200,000 rand wasn't practical. But what we've done now is we've picked up the conflict, we are fixing that, and in the meantime we have implemented a process where all quotations under 2,000 rand, you must physically get three quotations. So that has already been implemented. And I must also emphasize that for those findings relating to the three quotes, as well as all other findings under irregular expenditure, there was actually value. So there were no transactions there that were fraudulently done that he stated not get value for. Thank you.
Chair, maybe just a roundup on the same matter is that we also have learned that...
On the same matter, I'm tempted to ask a very simple question that should require a follow-up, that should require a very simple answer. How did you finance the Germiston Basin?
Chair, the funding of the AMD project was done at the back of an allocation initially. I think government allocated about 200 million. And subsequently, we then had an arrangement where we continued to have an agreement with the department to find money to be able to finance the project. However, we agreed that when the department is still looking for funding, we may have a bridging mechanism through the earnings from the Lesotho program, Chair, of which that was agreed upon. And that's how we've continuously financed whatever we have at this point. But subsequently, we believe that by the time we go to the market to raise money for the AMD, Chair, we would not have been have done too much of borrowing from another project to finance the other project, Chair. So that's how we did, Chair. Yes, I've answered the Chair on that matter. It was just a comment, Chairperson, that the discussion that we've had with our own auditors on the 200,000 rand issue that is now surfaced, we all agree that I think going forward, the instruments of the organization in terms of procurement for these issues, we must constantly review the legal language, because through that language, whether you miss a meal or shall, may cost you a bit of money in an opinion. So we've learned from that one thing.
We're done with Lesotho.
Thank you, Chair. I think Honorable Mguni asked about the number of polluted rivers. You know, in some cases, you get some streams coming to join the main river. Upstream might be good, but as soon as some sewage effluent comes in, it becomes polluted. But I think it should be safe for me to say that all our main rivers have been polluted by sewage. So we have the Service and the Crocodile, Komati and Usutu, all of them, I can safely say, have been polluted in one way or another by sewage. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The Honourable Member asked a question about preparedness for dealing with El Nino, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of the whole country, but I can make some comments. I think the first thing to note is that this is nothing new. South Africa has been dealing with major droughts for all of our history. They are likely to get more intense and worse as climate change impacts and the pressure on our water resources is increasing. So managing them is going to get more difficult. But we have a number of things that do stand in our stead. We have fairly, relative to the rest of sub-Saharan Africa, we actually have very well-developed infrastructure. So we have a lot more storage per capita than most other countries on the continent, which does actually serve to get us through droughts. And our droughts are usually somewhere around 7 to 9 years of drought. This is a particularly bad one. The El Nino that is sitting there is one of the worst that in the past sort of 65 years. The impact on dry land agriculture are not something that is the responsibility of the Department of Water Affairs or that can be managed other than really in a disaster management response. What the department and the municipalities can do is manage how water from dams and water from groundwater is used sustainably. All of the department's dams have in place operating rules. And those operating rules basically say when the dam reaches a certain level, these are the restrictions that get implemented when it reaches a lower level. And so there's a series of rules that you implement as to how the restrictions get put in place. The department did get involved in a process a couple of years ago of working with municipalities to try and make sure that they also had operating rules in place, because part of the process of transformation was that people who had the operating rules sitting in their heads had left and they weren't necessarily written operating rules. I'm not sure to what extent that was carried through and completed. The department can maybe talk about that. I know there have been problems with municipalities not necessarily putting, in some areas previously, not necessarily putting restrictions in place in time. But certainly the big municipalities are very well aware of those operating restrictions and the water boards, and they run according to those operating rules. So in that sense, I think probably most at risk are the smaller municipalities, but in terms of big municipalities, there are always costs and there are always challenges that come with a drought. From the water perspective, though, I think there's also an opportunity, because there's nothing that concentrates the mind on water issues like having a major drought and getting it back on the high up on the agenda of decision makers. Everybody suddenly becomes very aware again of the fact that this is an absolutely critical area. So I think we do have a fair amount in place to actually manage it, but there are and there always will be impacts from a major drought that are extremely difficult to deal with. And I think one of the challenges that comes out of it is, going forward, how do we make sure that we're also building in the adaptation to climate change, because it is going to get tougher. The department does have a strategy, an adaptation strategy for climate change, and there is a national strategy as well, but it's the implementation of that that becomes a challenge.
Mr. Singh. I take it we're done, members. On a matter related to alien vegetation, I'm very keen to get a sense from the department as to the type of relationship that you have with the Environment Department. Clearly, this is a matter that talks directly to water. The program is called Working for Water, and by right it is supposed to reside in a water and sanitation department. And especially the impact that the alien vegetation does, which is negative to the very same resource that we always talk about as being scarce. I'm very curious about that. Maybe if you can comment, if any. Very quick one. We are supposed to be out here by 2:30.
Yes.
Sorry, Mr. Singh. Just to add on to what you're saying there, I think that in one of the reports I read, I think it's Breda Hurl who commented on the success that they've had with clearing alien plant vegetation, water vegetation, and how that has impacted positively on the amount of water that they're able to save. There's a water saving mechanism. If Mr. Zink can respond to that as well.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We're dealing with this in the department. You will recall that when in the previous iteration of the ministry, it was Ministry of Water and Environmental Affairs, and the decision was taken that the project Working for Water was transferred to the Department of Environmental Affairs. But we have a very good relationship with Environmental Affairs, and in fact, just the other day I had a breakfast meeting with Dr. Guy Preston, who's managing the project for us, and we have a memorandum of understanding that regulates our relationship. We have had serious questions being asked about deforestation and all of those aspects. But Working for Water is actually the people that implement, as Dr. Thomas was indicating in his response, they actually carry out the actual work. So possibly the decision that is to be made is whether the Working for Water program must come back to the Department of Water. And I think that's a subject that we have raised, and we'll take up the discussion further with the DG and the Minister in terms of that. But at the World Forestry Congress, Minister spoke about the importance of the water security and the threat of alien vegetation. We believe that currently the working relationship that we have with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Working for Water program, and more at a personal level, the relationship that we have with Dr. Guy Preston, because he used to work for the department for many years, is in many instances we're able to address the challenges that we face. But having said that, it still remains that the discussion on whether the program should return rightfully so to the Department of Water, and that is something that we will have raised with the DG and the Minister, and take up that conversation with their counterparts in the Department of Environment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. That should be it from where I am seated. In the absence also of many other questions or comments, we shall have to thank the department and the entities for having made it here. We always take these sessions quite seriously, and as such, therefore, we equally wish the department and the entities always to do as they have been doing. And we must also bear in mind that whatever we say here, whether you shall not have taken any oath, it is legally binding. It has implications. So we always would wish that department and entities tell us the truth, nothing else but the truth as it is. And as we ask all these questions, we would also wish you to tell us the truth as is, we hope that this message goes across quite well. Records are kept. We do have the energy to come back on any question that shall have been asked and responded upon. So it also gets to be one of the things that we might wish to have it at the back of our minds as and when we do conduct ourselves in such meetings. Okay, we have come to a close as such, therefore we are adjourning. Next week, members, we are concluding on the BRRR budget review, the recommendation report, as in accordance with your money bills. And then that shall be on a Tuesday. The following day is going to be your midterm budget policy statement presented by the Minister of Finance. And the following day is going to be on a Wednesday. We have planned a session where the department comes for us to brief us on this long awaited legislative review. We are adopting an approach that says we have been waiting for the department and the department is not forthcoming. We are now digging. In other words, the department has to come before us and tell us exactly what is it that is happening. What are the main objects of the legislation that is expected to come before us? And then, of course, also, what is that we want to achieve? It's more or less the same thing. Okay?
I don't know if the committee secretary must also check the members. Remember, our date is Wednesday, and there are committees that are sitting on Tuesday. Ngunis in basic education is Tuesday. Makondan, Vilangula, and Eka, environment and arts and culture, those are Tuesdays. And the whips will fight with me that Tuesday is their day. And we must just check the quorum because we'll come here without a quorum.
Okay, those are internal that we shall have to deal with. But we have these deadlines as we speak, as prescribed by the powers that be. Granted, all the details the WIP is making reference to are important. That we shall obviously have to deal with. But as we speak now, we are confronted with that reality. Planning is done by the program committee, which puts us into the situation we are in. Without boring you about all our internals, the meeting is adjourned, and all the best, and thanks for the attention.